Hello, I'm Fiona and I am a London Walks guide and a blue badge and a green badge tourist guide in London. And since lockdown started, I have been sorting through my photos that I've taken over the last 5 or 6 years, which I'd never really done anything with. And I'm sorting them so that I can find ones of particular places in case I need to use them. But I've also been putting them up on Instagram as well, around about the time, the sort of anniversary of when they were taken. And I realised that with a few of the photos on Instagram, I had used a hashtag, Eyes of a Guide. And when I used that, I wasn't trying to say that guides have amazing supersonic eyesight. But one of the skills that we develop as guides is attention to detail. Because really, what we're doing when we're with clients is we are directing people's attention so that they notice the things that they maybe would not have noticed without us. And then we make sense of those things. We say what they are, why they're interesting. And so there's nothing that we like better than a small detail that tells a big story. And it's also true that there's an awful lot of stuff in the streets in any location which are incredibly familiar and immediately understandable to someone who's grown up in that area or lives in that area. If you're a driver, you know what the yellow lines by the side of the roads mean, and the red lines and the white zigzag lines that you get near the zebra crossing. But if you're visiting London or Britain for the first time, and you step out of your hotel door into the streets of London, then all of those details of the streetscape might need decoding to kind of make sense of where you are. So part of our job is that very sort of practical level stuff. But like I say, what we really like as guides is a detail that unpicks a much, much bigger story. And it might be a street sign, it might be a bend in the road, maybe it's the depth of a window frame. But those little visuals can help us to unlock the history and the way an area has developed. And there is a very good example of this. I think one of the photos that I found was one that I had taken at the Tower of London. And I was walking kind of up the hill and I noticed a small sweet, a small jelly sweet sitting on the stones of the Tower of London. And it wasn't just any old jelly sweet, it was shaped like a mobile phone. And there was something delightfully incongruous about that. An entirely sort of manufactured, modern, sugary, sweet thing made to look like a mobile phone, just sitting on the ancient stone cobbles of the Tower of London. And at the time, I think the clients I was with, I don't think they noticed it particularly. And why would they? Because again, this whole setting was completely unfamiliar, and you've got the beefeaters to look at, you've got the ravens, you've got 1,000-year-old stone walls. Why would you find your eyes drawn to a small jelly sweet? So I think I went, oh look, pointed it out, and I took a photo of it, and on we went with our day. But there is a story that could connect, and it's a story that ends in 1603 when Queen Elizabeth I was visiting a friend of hers, a friend and courtier called Catherine Howard. Now, first of all, this is a different Catherine Howard. So we all know the one who is the fifth wife of Henry VIII, who actually also is executed at the Tower of London, but not her, completely separate, different Catherine Howard. And this other Catherine was herself on her deathbed. And she sent a message to Elizabeth I, the Queen, saying, could you come and see me? There's an urgent matter. And the Queen arrives. And Catherine reaches out and gives Elizabeth I a ring and says, I must deliver this to you. At which point, the records say that Queen Elizabeth I strikes her friend Catherine on her deathbed, strikes her across the face and says to her, may God forgive you, I never shall, and storms out. Because she recognised the ring. It was her ring. And many, many years before, she had given it to a young man, a favourite of hers, the Earl of Essex, Robert Devereux. And she has said to him, if at any time you find yourself in trouble, then send me this ring and I will save you. I will protect you. I will make it right. And Essex had kept the ring. But relationship between them had not gone well over the years. He'd been sent to Ireland and not managed to do what he was supposed to do in Ireland. He had kind of was leading a rebellion against her, and eventually it comes to a head and an actual definite rebellion headed by the Earl of Essex in 1601, in February, the 8th of February 1601 was the date that Essex kind of proclaimed his uprising on the streets of London, and was arrested because it didn't work as an uprising, and was sent to the Tower of London. Was put on trial. The trial lasted one day, so it was a very clear-cut case. He was accused and found guilty of treason, and he was to be executed, beheaded, at the Tower of London. But the night before his execution, he has one last throw of the dice. And it's the ring. Because he knows if he can get the ring to Elizabeth I, then whatever he has done, there's a chance that she will stick by her promise and that she will protect him and she will save him. But he doesn't know how to get it to her. Now, if you're a prisoner at the Tower of London, there's all manner of variation in the way that you could be treated, and it depended very much who you were, what you'd done, how wealthy you were, how sympathetic the jailers were to your particular set of circumstances. And if you had someone sympathetic, if you paved their way with a little of extra cash, perhaps you could sneak out messages, you could have a correspondence, you could eat better food. But Essex knew that none of the jailers he could trust to send the ring. Not only that, remember, in this situation, if you were one of the guards, the jailers, and you had taken the ring from Essex and been instrumental in giving it to Elizabeth, well, that was a pretty risky enterprise for you, because you don't know how she's going to react. You're not just communicating from one traitor to another traitor, a random traitor somewhere in London. You are taking a message from a traitor to the person that they have betrayed. And so that would be a pretty risky action. So Essex, in desperation, knows there is one lady in London who might be able to help him, who is friendly enough to him and friendly enough to Queen Elizabeth I, still has the ears of the Queen, who might be able to pass on this ring and intercede on his behalf. And to get the ring to her, he has to take a risk. He calls out of his window of the cell at the Tower and shouts down to a passing boy and says to the boy, oi, oi, you, boy, there's money in it for you if you run me an errand. And the boy says, yes, that's fine, I'll take the money, I'll take the ring, all good. And the boy sets off with the ring and is given instructions to take it to Lady Scroope. Lady Scroope is Essex's last chance to influence the Queen. But for whatever reason, this boy does not take the ring to Lady Scroope. he takes it instead to Catherine Howard. And Howard's husband, very much an enemy of Essex, and it did not get to Elizabeth I that night. So you can imagine the situation of Essex facing his last night on earth in his cell at the Tower, or his room at the Tower of London, lying in a bed, but lying awake and waiting and waiting and hoping and praying that he will hear some other news. But let's imagine Elizabeth I. She knew Essex had the ring. She knew she'd made this promise. And maybe she would have liked a reason to forgive him. Maybe fulfilling that promise was one acceptable way, one sort of hint of chivalry left, that she could find a way out of this predicament. And he had been a favourite for many years. He had been absolutely someone she liked and trusted. So perhaps she saw the ring as one last possibility as well. And maybe that night, on the other side of London, lying awake in her palace, maybe she too was waiting and waiting and hoping and praying for someone to knock on the door. We know she recognised the ring when she saw it from Catherine Howard 2 years later, 2 years after Essex had been executed. So perhaps it was on her mind. The ring still survives. It's at Westminster Abbey, and it has been on display in the museum there in the past. So hopefully when the Abbey reopens fully and the museum reopens, you would be able to head in and see Essex's ring, or Elizabeth I's ring. But we take our mobile phones so much for granted these days. We use them for everything, not just communicating phones, but the internet and the this and the that and the photos and the cameras. And I took my photo of the jelly sweet shaped like a mobile phone with the camera on my mobile phone. But we take them so much for granted that the power of communication, the importance of communication, and the ability to communicate, which may at times have you know, in the way it could be hit or miss, could affect, it was a matter of life and death in some cases. And it's only just occurred to me now, as I say this, that of course communicating is the thing that guides do best, do most. So maybe that brings me full circle back to the eyes of the guide and the our raison d'etre to explain and understand, make sense of the world.